From The Spy Analyst, Athens versus Sparta, China versus US, One Ancient Fear, One Hidden Fault Line, and The Whole World Sitting in Between, Why America and China Can't Just Get Along, and Why They Build Power So Differently. Some patterns are too old to notice. This one is too dangerous to ignore. For readers who want the core intelligence before the full file opens, one half of this story is a 2,500-year-old psychological trap that two Greek city-states fell into first. The other half is a hidden divide between two completely different operating systems for running a civilization. Put them together, and almost every confusing headline about the U.S.-China rivalry suddenly makes sense. 25 centuries ago, two Greek city-states went to war, not because they hated each other, but because the older, stronger one got scared of the younger, faster-rising one. A historian named Thucydides wrote down exactly why. Today, foreign policy scholars call this the Thucydides trap, and it lines up almost perfectly with how Washington has started watching Beijing. That fear doesn't stay locked inside think tanks. It leaks into real decisions, including military operations that look like they're about one country, but are quietly addressed to a much bigger audience watching from the sidelines. But there's a second layer underneath all of this, one most coverage skips entirely. America and China aren't just two governments competing for the top spot. They are two fundamentally different machines for getting things done, one built by people trained to argue in courtrooms, the other built by people trained to solve equations. That divide explains why one country has laid enough high-speed track in two decades to circle the entire planet, while the other is still arguing over the first 171 miles of a single line it promised to build 17 years ago. Two forces, one ancient fear, one structural divide. Together, they're quietly running the world. Now, let's open the full file. What could a war fought before the invention of the compass possibly tell us about satellites, semiconductors, and aircraft carriers? No drones? No bond markets? No supply chains stretching across oceans? Just spear-armed infantry, wooden hulls, and stone fortifications? So why dig that far back? Because old conflicts don't actually disappear when the fighting stops. They leave behind something less visible than a treaty, a kind of inherited instinct for how powerful groups behave once they sense the ground shifting underneath them. Strip away the titles, the flags, and the technology, and the decision-making instinct inside a modern superpower isn't actually all that different from the one inside an ancient city-state. Same dread of being overtaken, same impulse to defend something decades in the making, same unease watching a rival close the distance season after season without a single villain anywhere in the story. That instinct is still active right now, inside rooms full of people who would never describe themselves as superstitious. Here's the part that's easy to miss. The brain running a modern superpower is the same brain that ran an ancient city-state. The tools changed beyond recognition, the borders, the currencies, the satellites, the warheads, but the underlying wiring didn't get an update. The dread of being overtaken, the instinct to guard what took decades to build, the unease of watching a rival get stronger year after year without a single act of aggression to point to, that wiring is still running, mostly out of sight, inside the decisions of people who would never describe themselves as old-fashioned. We're going to dig that instinct up today. Once you've seen its shape, the news starts reading differently. Forget today's borders and flags for a moment. Ancient Greece wasn't one country. It was a cluster of fiercely independent city-states, each running its own government, fielding its own army, and watching its neighbors the way people with shared walls always do, closely and a little nervously. Picture a tightly packed patchwork of micronations, each with its own sense of itself, each with everything to lose. Two of those city-states would go on to shape the next 2.5 millennia of political thinking, Sparta, Athens. And between them, something started that felt almost too ordinary to notice at the time, competition. Hold on to that thread, because the shape of that competition is still playing out today. Not something like it. The exact same structure. Different uniforms. Before we get to armies and warships, picture something smaller and more familiar. something most of us have lived through ourselves. There's an office. One department has been run for 15 years by the same person. Let's call her the department head. Nobody has seriously challenged her position in all that time. She's not loud about her authority. She doesn't need to be. Decisions route through her, out of habit, out of precedent, out of the simple fact that she has always been the one in the room when it mattered. Her position isn't a title on a business card. It's a gravity that has organized everything around it. Now look three offices down the hall. There's someone else there. Newer, much further down the org chart, with no claim on the department head's territory at all. But colleagues have started noticing something. This person is sharp. Sharper than anyone expected. Taking on projects nobody assigned her, picking up skills faster than anyone budgeted for, quietly becoming the person clients ask for by name. This newer colleague isn't maneuvering against the department head. There's no campaign, no whispered ambition, no plan to take anyone's chair. She's simply doing what talented people do, working hard, getting better, for her own sake, one quarter at a time. And here's the uncomfortable truth. That's already enough. The newer colleague doesn't have to want the department head's job. She only has to have become capable enough that the possibility now exists. In the psychology of status, potential does almost all the damage. You don't need an actual rival standing in front of you. You only need someone who could plausibly become one. The suspicion alone rewires everything. Improvement, even when it is completely well-meant, almost never reads as harmless to the person standing still. The department head doesn't need an insult thrown her way. She just needs to watch this colleague get better quarter after quarter until a question takes shape that she can't quite say out loud. What happens if this keeps going? Once that question lodges itself, the relationship stops being neutral. Friction stops being a maybe. It becomes close to inevitable, and when it finally surfaces, it won't be calm, because by then it's no longer about who's better at the job. It's about something older and more primal, who stays at the top and who gets moved aside. Hold that feeling. We're about to watch the identical shape play out with navies instead of office politics, and the future of an entire civilization sitting on the table. In the true version of events, Sparta wore the champion's belt. Generations of brutal, ritualized military training had made it the single most feared land power anyone in the region could remember. Nobody had seriously tested that reputation in living memory. The gap between Sparta and everyone else had been stable long enough that people had quietly stopped treating it as a gap at all. It simply felt like the natural order of things. Then Athens did exactly what the rising colleague in our office story did. Across decades, patiently, it turned a modest fleet of fishing and trading vessels into the most capable navy the Aegean had ever seen, strong enough, eventually, to reach coastlines Sparta had never once worried about defending. It closed a discipline gap that Spartan commanders had long assumed was simply permanent, and it stitched together a widening web of allied cities, one region at a time, without ever issuing a single threat in the process. None of it was a declaration aim,